Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 17, 2017. IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan says Riek Machar will not take part in the forum to revive the 2015 peace deal.
He will be represented there. So his idea, his thinking, his position, and everything he's thinking about will be represented.
And USAID embarks on a project to help South Sudanese communities harvest their own food in the face of conflict.
We want to help people restore and strengthen good agricultural production practices, sustainable crop production, sustainable fish catching, and then sustainable livestock production and disease outbreaks.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, confirmed that Riek Machar will not be in the upcoming high-level meeting aimed at reviving the 2015 peace deal. IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, Ismail Wise, describes the consultative meeting IGAD ministers held with various South Sudanese parties as positive and constructive, but says Riek Machar will not directly participate in the high-level revitalization forum.
He will be represented there. So his idea, his thinking, his position, and everything he's thinking about will be represented.
Wise says IGAD ministers have met with all stakeholders, including opposition and estranged groups, headed by General Thomas Cirillo, former Western Equatoria State Governor Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, General Peter Gadet, and former Deputy Chief of Army Staff General Bapin Montreal. Wise says the Transitional Government of National Unity and other parties to the agreement have welcomed the revitalization process and plans to include estranged groups. He says IGAD officials and various groups discussed the key areas of concern, and IGAD will now use the outcome of the consultation to prepare for the high-level revitalization forum.
They all agreed to ceasefire, cessation of hostilities, support of the revitalization forum, and realistic timeline as well. So this is a very, very important steps we can build on.
The Forum to Revive the 2015 Peace Deal is an initiative spearheaded by the IGAD heads of state during their meeting held in July. IGAD leaders acknowledged the 2015 peace deal has not been implemented and directed the IGAD Council of Ministers to initiate resuscitation of the peace agreement. Wise says although his office is optimistic about the resuscitation of the agreement, but the path ahead is still very rough.
Never said it is. It will be easy. But we won't really, we mean it very serious, and we are very determined to lead this country to peace.
Observers and other parties to the peace deal, such as former detainees, have warned that without the full participation of Riek Machar, the new round of talks will likely fail. John Luke, the spokesman for the former detainees, said in an interview with VOA last week that there are many people in the bush still fighting for Riek Machar.
The people who are shooting these days in parts of South Sudan claim to be loyal to Riek Machar. And that by itself is not even allowing the implementation of the permanent ceasefire. I think the fact that he has people who still think they are his supporters and who are armed, that constitutes a problem. It constitutes a problem because you cannot wish that away if there are still people who are fighting. Those guns must be silenced and a way must be found to silence them.
IGAD is expected to convene the high-level revitalization forum sometime in December. This report was compiled by Waki Simon Wudu in Juba. The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, says it's working to address widespread food shortages across South Sudan and help communities to cope with economic and environmental-related shocks connected to the ongoing conflict. USAID's mission director in South Sudan says the agency will work with the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization to support farming and fishing, helping families to become more self-reliant. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
USAID mission director in Juba, Jeff Bakken, says the agency has set aside more than $27 million to boost agriculture and food production in South Sudan over the next 3 years.
We think that's a good amount. It's a very healthy amount of seed money. There's another project that a corollary project that will build small farm-to-market feeder roads that will generally be in the same area that will support this project. And that will be with another UN agency.
That other agency is the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. Bakken says the project is aimed at reducing South Sudanese communities' over-reliance on food aid.
Right now there are about 12 million people in the country. 6 million of those 12 million, a little bit over half, require humanitarian assistance. That means just about half the people somehow are coping here, and they have an ability to be productive, and it's keeping them off the humanitarian assistance roll somehow. And so what we want to do is to find a way to keep those people off the humanitarian assistance rolls and work with people who are vulnerable but viable households to provide opportunities to tackle resilience in a concrete way in this very difficult environment.
His staff working on the project will try to restore and diversify livelihood opportunities for South Sudanese and improve the ones that already exists, such as beekeeping. Bakken says the money will help build the capacity of South Sudanese communities to engage in better agricultural practices and more quickly recover from the devastating effects of conflict and food insecurity.
We want to help people restore and strengthen good agricultural production practices. Those would, of course, include sustainable crop production, sustainable fish catching in the rivers around here, and then sustainable livestock production and disease outbreaks. And then one of the important areas that's always important because of the different dynamics between communities is just strengthening community and intercommunal resource sharing and management practices, for example, use of land and water resources to promote peaceful coexistence.
Sharing land or water are good examples of communal resource sharing. South Sudan's nearly four-year conflict has devastated many communities, making many families vulnerable to food insecurity and natural disaster. Bakken hopes the new project will change that.
It's going to help build a foundation for resilience and recovery at the community level so that if and when peace takes hold in this country, and we hope that will be soon, they can speed up their transition and recovery and survive future economic conflict and environment-related shocks, things like drought or price fluctuations of food in the markets or economic changes.
The Sustainable Agriculture for Economic Resiliency project will first be implemented in various communities of Lakes, Northern Bahr Ghazal, Jonglei, and Western Equatorial States. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
International Monetary Fund and World Bank held their meetings here in Washington this week and discussed ways of tapping into South Sudan's agriculture. South Sudan's delegation tells Ayen Bior that donors are looking at new ways to help diversify South Sudan's economy.
South Sudan's economy is overwhelmingly dependent on oil, but it doesn't have to be, according to Stephen Du Dao, the country's finance minister.
South Sudan is a country that is rich with of all resources, land, water, variety of climates and all this. So we are starting first to increase the capacity of collection of non-oil revenue, then funding the productive sectors, agricultural sector, mineral sector, and mining, and other non-oil sectors that which we are endowed with these resources in South Sudan.
Diversifying the economy in South Sudan has been a major topic of discussion among IMF and World Bank representatives, according to Diu. He says his delegation has agreed to pursue a new strategy proposed by donors last week that will help farmers feed their communities. The idea is to provide modern farming equipment while providing lessons on how to best cultivate the land. Human rights watchdogs and humanitarian aid agencies working in South Sudan have said that food insecurity exists in the country, primarily because of the ongoing conflict between government and rebel forces. If the conflict stops, observers say, South Sudan's farmers would be positioned to grow enough food to feed the entire country. While recognizing that violence has been perpetrated by both government and rebel forces in South Sudan, Diu accuses rebels of leading a propaganda campaign aimed at encouraging South Sudanese to flee their homes.
It is the interest of the rebels when we are fighting the government. You want to create a situation where the population must be a part of the war, so that when they leave their areas, and then that will bring attention to internal community. And this is what happened in South Sudan. Our population was scared by the news from the rebel groups that, look, if you don't leave, you will be killed, an atrocity will take place. And this is of course a part of the warfare strategy, unfortunately, using the innocent people.
Diu says he stressed to observers attending the IMF meetings that his country is on the right track toward restoring economic stability and peace in the country. Otom Rago Ajak, the governor of South Sudan's central bank, who accompanied the delegation, noted the diplomatic tensions caused by nearly 4 years of conflict.
Of course, you have the strained relation between us and the U.S. because of the problems at home. And, of course, we all need peace. The Americans want us to have peace, say that they could come and help us. And actually, America has been the biggest helper of South Sudan. They need peace in South Sudan, so that they could contribute.
Both Diu and Rago say attendees to the IMF World Bank meetings were receptive to their message, although Rago says he spoke with USAID representatives who sternly criticized the country's leaders' inability to end the conflict. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Still to come, we take a look at children in the Lake Chad Basin. That story is coming up right after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
which African city would you most like to visit and why? Johannesburg. It's really a nice place to chill in because I have a relative there. And they really tell me about something like that. The beaches, the restaurants.
Bulawayo in Zimbabwe. You see, Bulawayo has got one of the rare kinds of streets. There is a street called Sorbonne Street, and it is more than 10 kilometers, and it is straight, no curve, no corner. It is just straight.
I like to visit Alexandria, the city of Pharaoh, the city where the pyramids are found.
To be there, and I be shown by a specialist the line of equator, where it passes. That is the most reason why I like to first visit Ghana, Accra.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about what is causing acute malnutrition among children in the Lake Chad Basin. United Nations aid agencies say the Boko Haram conflict continues to exacerbate acute malnutrition in the Lake Chad Basin, leaving 800,000 children under 5 at risk this year. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from villages around Garao in northern Cameroon, where aid workers are trying to reverse the trend by educating mothers.
Northern Cameroon was already grappling with high rates of chronic child malnutrition, as much as 30% before the Boko Haram conflict arrived in 2014. Since then, mass displacement and the influx of refugees has contributed to food shortages. The insecurity by the conflict has brought a virtual halt to farming and herding activities. The UN Children's Fund says the rate of acute malnutrition among children in far northern Cameroon is climbing to emergency levels.
Il y a des mamans qui ne comprennent pas que c'est un traitement.
Calvin Lamisa, a point person for UNICEF and the government of Cameroon, says they have decided to move from house to house to educate women on how to feed their children because they have noticed that as soon as mothers start seeing signs of improvement, they stop visiting hospitals to follow up treatments for their malnourished children. She says they recommend that some children continue treatment for up to 12 months because a lot of them are exposed to illnesses and suffer from severe diarrhea due to poor hygiene. VOA joined health workers as they met with 200 mothers in the village of Kose.
Some.
27-year-old Bedale Asta recently lost one of her two-month-old twins. She says she gave birth at home and she immediately started giving water and traditional meals to her babies and discovered that they were permanently sick. She says the village healer told her that the children were either suffering from malaria or stomach disorders. The World Health Organization recommends exclusive breastfeeding for newborns until the age of 6 months. For older babies and children, UNICEF is distributing ready-to-use therapeutic foods and nutrient packs.
Je fais la démonstration culinaire. La nourriture déjà préparée.
Trainer and health worker Seni Bukar says he is demonstrating to the women that when they prepare food for their households, they should remove the portion they are to serve to their babies and young children and add a spoonful of the vitamin pack provided by UNICEF. He says he is asking the women to wash their hands with clean water and soap before cooking and especially before feeding their children. UNICEF says in northern Cameroon, about 60,000 refugee and internally displaced children under the age of 5 are at risk of severe acute malnutrition this year, while another 145,000 children under the age of 5 are facing stunted growth. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua, Cameroon.
The United Nations reports conditions in Central African Republic have continued to worsen since a serious outbreak of intercommunal violence in mid-May between the Muslim Seleka and largely Christian anti-Balaka armed groups. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Fighting in some parts of Central African Republic has become so intense, the United Nations and private aid agencies have had to suspend their activities. The UN humanitarian coordinator in the CAR, Najat Rochdi, says security has become so bad in the East, agencies have had to change their mode of operations.
We cannot do it anymore, business as usual, having bases, you know, here and there, but rather strengthening some hubs, actually, around a number of cities where the security is much more important, and from there fly in special emergency teams, a kind of surge teams.
Since January, the United Nations reports a 50% increase in the number of internally displaced people to 600,000. Refugee numbers also have increased to nearly 500,000. Rochdi says humanitarian operations in the country are suffering from severe underfunding. She says only 39% of the nearly $500 million appeal for this year has been received. Because of the lack of funding, she says food rations have had to be cut in half.
And that there are places where actually we have stopped the food distribution. We already have very serious worsening of the malnutrition situation. And for example, unfortunately, in the southeast, we started already seeing children dying from severe malnutrition.
Humanitarian coordinator Rochdi says there are unconfirmed reports that 10 children have died from malnutrition-related causes in the town of Zemio in southeastern CAR. She says shelter and protection concerns also are growing. Another cause for alarm is education. She says 400,000 children are not going to school. She warns nearly a whole generation of children who have lost out on education may not have a viable future, and this, she says, will spell disaster for the whole country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya's opposition has suspended protests following deadly unrest Monday as the country struggles to finalize a seemingly never-ending presidential election. As tensions rise, some see traces of the decades-long competition between two of Kenya's top political families coming to the forefront. From Western Kenya and Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has the story.
Daily twists and turns since Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the August presidential results. A new challenge, perhaps, but familiar faces, with each side more entrenched than ever. The rivalry between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga echoes that of their fathers, the country's first president and vice president following independence in 1963. Wilbur Otichilo is governor of Kenya's Vihiga County.
During those early 60s, there was this big rivalry between the West and the East. And that's now how the two now became rival. And after 1 year of being vice president, Jomo Kenyatta fired Jaramogi Odinga from his government. And that's how he formed the opposition.
The two men disagreed on general ideology and on resource and land allocation issues, much like their sons. But University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora cautions against oversimplification.
There's something in you, perhaps, as a human being, that you say, well, I will fight the wars of my father. I will complete what my father started. You could look at it that way, but I have already explained, I see it beyond that myself. Because there's a clear dichotomy in the arrangement of our politics. And our economics and everything else in this country.
Since independence, no one from outside Kenya's Rift Valley or central provinces has ruled the country, feeding a sense of marginalization in the West, Odinga's home region. That has been exacerbated by Odinga's contested defeats in the past three elections. Opposition supporter Zeblon Olo works as a mechanic in Kakamega County.
Since independence, we were Mr. Jomo Kenyatta. He rules for 15 years. Then Moi Tuks. He rules for 24 years. After that, Mr. Kibaki took. He rules 10 years. After that, Mr. Uhuru has taken. Now it's 5 years. Now, from there is no anything we have helped between Western Kenya. We are down.
There is more to Kenyan politics than familial rivalry. Odinga has dominated the opposition for decades, while Uhuru Kenyatta, a man 17 years his junior, only became interested in politics in the early 2000s. Previously, Odinga even supported candidates from Kenyatta's Kikuyu ethnic group, including his former rival Mwai Kibaki at one point. And now, some politicians in the West, like former Vihiga County Governor Moses Akaranga, are switching sides, backing Kenyatta for the October 26th repeat election.
Many Kenyans are talking about, including the Luos in Kisumu. They feel that if now we vote for Uhuru Kenyatta, he will finish his term completely, will go home. So the Kenyatta dynasty will have gone. Raila will not make it again because of his age. So the Jaramogi Odinga's dynasty also will have gone. So the Kenyatta and Jaramogi will now leave Kenyans to choose or elect a leader from another dynasty.
For now, however, Kenyans just wait for the next developments in an election season that has been anything but ordinary. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Abracadabra by Kofi Olomide. We've been listening to Kofi Olomide with the song Jean Patou from his album Abracadabra. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. It's good to be back with you. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.